Howdy, everybody. The following is a recorded discussion with Chaplain Raymond, our Attorney General, for February 3rd, 2011. Today's maxims were over legal rights.
Okay, today is February 4th, and we're doing five maxims today. And so I'll have to deduce what the general subject is, but I notice that this first one is a very, very good one. We ought to remember right in the beginning. Every general principle or maxim of law is its own pledge or warrant. And things that are clearly true are not to be proved. That is saying that you don't debate the truth of a maxim. You accept them because they've stood the test of hundreds of years. So every general principle or maxim that we teach. Now, I must qualify that. I've noticed there's a creeping in of some of the things that exist over in statutory law for sometimes, but I usually try to mention it. But not at this one. This one is this is very good and very proper. And it is the place on which you stand. If somebody says, I don't want to hear anything about maxims, you just say, sorry, but this is it. You can't question these. Okay, next one. The exception to the rule should not destroy the rule. That's a common law maxim. An exception proves the existence of a rule. Now, this one has always been a very difficult one for me to grasp and explain. If it's an exception, it is obviously an exception to something. All right? So,
yes.
If it's an exception to a rule, then the rule exists.
Yeah.
Does everyone understand that?
Yes.
Now, let me give you a proper one. In the Internal Revenue Code, Title 26, which is not positive law, but are the terms and conditions of contracts that people can enter into with the Internal Revenue Service, you'll find that there are places in there where it's duties and rights of both the employees of IRS and the taxpayer. Remember, since it's a contract, rights and duties, each side, rights and duties. So, there in the Internal Revenue Code are instructions to the employees as well. So, one of them is in Section 508 of the Internal Revenue Code with regard to churches. And it says to the employees of the Internal Revenue Service that if it's a church or all churches receive mandatory exception. Okay, this is a good example because here is the whole Internal Revenue Code. Who can deny that that does not exist? Who can deny that that exists? Excuse me. And we're saying, well, this is an exception to it. So the exception, it's an exception because the rule exists. It's a rule because the exception exists. Everybody follow that?
Yes.
Yes.
Very good. As to things not apparent and those not existing, the rule is the same. Now, if this is saying if you know something doesn't exist, you know, it doesn't exist, you can't use it. It's not evidence. It's not here. It's not there. So it's poof. It's gone. Now, there are some things when you're carrying on a conversation or discussion or education, whatever, that certain things are not apparent. Now, one of those I always thought about was, if anybody studied calculus, there is the concept of a limit.
Yes.
And it took months for me, 1 month total, to get to the point where I really began to understand it. Now, for those who don't know, what it says is something gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it gets to be nothing, and then it means something.
Mm.
So we're dealing with things not apparent, however, in this case. It was not apparent to me for the longest time, so it didn't exist. And they're saying when things are not apparent, they do not exist. Whatever they're talking about, the rule is the same. Well, if you can later prove that it exists, then this falls by the wayside. Next one. Not only what is permitted, but what is convenient is to be considered, because what is inconvenient is illegal. Now, I'm going to need a little help on this one. We know that Jefferson said that the design of our government was one of inefficiency. It was meant to be inconvenient. So to what they're referring to here, I am not certain. Not only what is permitted, but what is convenient is to be considered. In other words, it's going to be difficult to really get into this. If you were presenting evidence and they said, but it would have been easier for him to go this way than go that way. What you do is you take the convenient method as the fact and not the inconvenient as the fact, unless you can prove it. Is that making helping any?
Yes, I got an idea on it.
Okay. You got an example?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I was thinking about a traffic crash, but I'm not sure.
Inconvenient. By what is convenient?
Could that go back to the, there was a previous maxim that it is, that you can never require the impossible, right? Well, what if something is extremely inconvenient where it's maybe not impossible, but it's just unreasonable to expect it? I don't know.
Yes. Yes, but I don't think they're getting into it. I think there's probably something else that covers that. Yes, you're correct, Will. But this has to do with an effort factor to me. When something is convenient, you go to the convenience store because you don't drive as far to go to the market. And it's convenient. It's usually a time-related thing when you think in terms of convenience. So, recognize and remember that this maxim exists, because if you do, when you encounter a circumstance out there, you'll see it. You'll know it.
Well,
I guarantee you.
Chaplain Raymond, would this be, I'm trying to understand, our government up in D.C. was put in a box, and for them to act or do their procedures, whatever, they have a certain rule that they have to follow. Would that be what is considered convenient?
Well, when you have something explicit defining the rules, no, that's a rule. You don't try to equivocate and say, well, I'm trying to use rules to define convenient. No. I think convenient is a time thing.
Okay.
You know, if you think, well, it wasn't very convenient for me to do it. Well, what was the nature of that inconvenience? usually it's you didn't have time. And it wasn't, I had other things going on and I just couldn't stop what I was doing. I'm having difficulty thinking of a pertinent example that would bring it to light.
Yeah.
Let me try it on.
Okay.
Is that Joe?
Yep.
Mr. Joe.
What I was thinking of is, for example, if going hunting, it used to be in Indiana you could hunt on Saturday, but you couldn't hunt on Sunday. Okay? And if I am permitted to hunt on Saturday, and I have the ability to hunt on Saturday, but if I choose to hunt on Sunday because I've got access, no, I lost it.
When you try to bring in the factor of time, it gets to be really difficult to describe. You almost have to have a sequence of events convenient. I'll tell you an inconvenience. They took the door lock off the right side of my car. Okay, you can't use a key on the right side of the car now, on the passenger side in the front. And that's an inconvenience.
Oh, I have an example. I just thought of an example.
Okay.
imagine a courtroom, and the name is called, or whoever is supposed to stand up and come up front. Well, he doesn't, because he was in the hall and slipped and fell on a banana and was injured. Now, the bailiff, as he was getting ready to come into the court, saw all that. When the man's name is called, not only what is permitted, but what is convenient. It's convenient for the bailiff to say, I saw the man and he intended to come, but he slipped on the banana and injured himself. And I was a witness to that. Now, that would take care of the first clause. The second clause is to be considered, but what is inconvenient is illegal. Now, if the bailiff said, the bailiff who went into the other court told me he faced one of my men who was supposed to be coming into my court, slipped and fell on a banana and got injured. I presume that would be illegal because it's third party.
Well, I think good faith and judgment would say you'd accept it. But inconvenient is illegal. Now, the other thing this could be, now, let's suppose, but what is convenient? Let's suppose that he was talking about terms on a contract and duties that were to be performed. But the other party was saying, no, he has to go do this and this and this and this and this, which was a much more convoluted and just inconvenient way than the other party in performing his duties did nothing. Now, this is what happens when people try to do deceptions. You know, all of a sudden somebody figures out a convenient way to do something and it doesn't enable them to implement their deception. So if a guy is doing something he's supposed to do, which is more convenient than what the contract had called for, but it wouldn't make the other one illegal. This is where I'm having a problem. Inconvenient
okay,
is illegal.
Okay, Chaplain Raymond, the definition for convenient in Black's Law Dictionary is proper, just, suitable, fit, adapted, proper, becoming, appropriate. So if we substitute proper in there, it's not only what is permitted, but what is proper is to be considered, because what is improper is illegal.
All right.
Very good.
All right.
Very
so
good.
This is one of those really tight law words, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that is. That is a tight, convenient. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's an example of us and the wording and the words being lost over time.
Yes.
Definitions.
Yes. What is proper and suitable?
Yeah.
What is unsuitable is illegal. Okay. And I can see where that works in contracts where we're interpreting duties and whether how you should perform them. Somebody complains. The law does not arise from the rule or maxim, but the rule from the law. Who is that Trey Lat Max? Do you know? I don't have my little book here.
I've got it.
Is it in the back?
Yeah.
Yes.
Trey Leg Max, Trainer, Latin Legal Maxims and Phrases, etc.
Okay.
The author's name is Trainer.
So that's new one, isn't it? More than likely. The law does not arise from the rule, but the rule from the law. Now, I can see leaving out the phrase or maxim and reading that thing. The law does not arise from the rule, but the rule from the law. That I would agree with. But it says or maxim.
Hmm.
We would say that if you write a law that violates a maxim, it's not a law. Would we not?
That's what I was thinking, yes. I'm surprised by this one.
The law does not arise from the rule or maxim. I guess it's in the word arise. It doesn't mean depend upon it. If you're using the word maxim, the law does depend upon the maxim to be law. So I think this is an example of a statutory, non-statutory maxim.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you that it applies without or maxim in it in the statutory jurisdictions. That's just a guess.
I just looked up the book online, and it looks like the publication year was 2001. So,
okay.
Yeah, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
See, this is the subtle way. That's a good one to remember for the other reason. Notice that it belittles the maxim.
Mm-hmm.
It conditions you to not count on the maxims, to eliminate it from your where you stand and where you start.
Well, let's see. Lord
is
Trainer,
that?
Latin Maxims and Phrases, second edition was 1876.
That's the year they incorporated.
Scott's Law. Mm. Okay.
That's the year they incorporated. Does not rise from the war maxim. He must be thinking something pretty esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
The law usually, you don't write rules. Now, I'll tell you what it could be, too. Let's talk about the way they do things in Washington, D.C. You're aware that you have three layers of rules that you are attempting to live under over in statutory. One is the statute itself. Okay? Which is then used by committees who write the code. And then the code is used to write procedures. Like the Secretary of Treasury's have all these procedures. We used to call them rev procs. Rev proc so-and-so, rev proc so-and-so, number so-and-so. And they were like rules that you had to do. You know, rev proc so-and-so is that 1040 is filed on April 15th. So the rule could be cleared down in the procs and not the code. The statutes, the code, and the procedures. Now, the procedures up here in the Federal Register, okay? And then there's some that are added on as they go. But so you have the statutes from Congress, the code from the group of attorneys
from the committees
who mastermind our control, and the Federal Register. And that's the way our country is governed, or has been governed up till now. So the rules would not appear until after the law. And I think that's what this is aiming at, okay?
Okay.
It's justifying that statutory system that they were wanting to implement when they created the corporation. So...
Well, I had some thoughts, and I don't know if they're valid or not, but in the Old Testament, you had laws such as remember the Sabbath. And as a result of that law, they came up with a whole bunch of rules. And of course, a lot of those were man-made rules, but those rules that they made about keeping the Sabbath, they did not create the law, remember the Sabbath. It was the law that created those rules that they made.
Yes. Can I share a word with you about that point?
Sure.
The Hebrew word is takanot, T-A-K-N-O-T. That is a man-made law. And so what you're describing is from the God's law, they made up a bunch of takanot, like on Sabbath you can only walk so far.
Right.
Then they made another rule. Well, how far can you walk on the Sabbath? Well, what you do is if you're in a new place is you go out the day before the Sabbath and see how far you can walk in that area that you are, and that becomes the length of the Sabbath day walk. Mm-hmm. Now, what you may not know is that working with some really good scholars on the interpretation and reading of the Hebrew of Matthew, they've discovered... One guy, they call him Karaite, that is their sect, believes that none of the laws made by man are valid, only God's law. So they refer to the takanots as being things that God didn't specify. And you had more freedom than that if you ignored them. So what happened is the Karaite rabbi is reading the Hebrew Matthew, and after he finished, and I know this gentleman, he came in, he said, you know what? Jesus was a Karaite. I said, what? Yes. How do you know? He said, you know, many of his miracles were actually violations of the takanah of the Pharisees. For example, healing the man beside Bethesda's pool. And he said, take up your bed and walk. That was a violation of the Takana. He wasn't allowed to walk because he didn't walk the day before. That's true. That really is true. It sounds ridiculous, but it was true.
That was a strange statute.
Well, I mean, that's the way they interpret him. That,
yeah.
And that's who he was talking about. Your traditions, the traditions of man. He didn't call them laws or rules. He just called them traditions. Anyway, yes, that's an excellent example. Yes, sir. Well, every one of these things we discuss and don't quite nail down, the thing to do is remember they're there, and your mind, I think the Holy Spirit will help, and your mind will trigger this when you know it. Now that we've discussed it enough to know that we need to be paying attention and be looking for this, we'll identify when it applies.
That's right.
And the same is true with this one with the maxim, but I think it's much more akin to statutory when they put in the word or maxim. We just said maxims are clearly true and are not to be proved.
Right.
So why would you write a law that did not have to conform to the maxims? All right.
Well, thank you, Chaplain Raymond.
I'm sorry I was late. I'm a computer dunce some days.
No problem.
You're forgiven.